Welcome to the Whitaker Report, where we take a close look at the art and science of economic development. I'm your host, Dean Whitaker, President and CEO of Whitaker Associates, Inc. In each episode, we introduce you to leaders in the world of corporate site selection and economic development. We speak with members of the economic development community to provide you with insight into the best and next practices in the profession. In this episode, we will have as our guest Mark James. Mark is a utility practice lead with Hickey Global, LLC, a full-service economic development consultancy and part of the Hickey & Associates, the largest site selection firm in the world. His focus areas include strategic planning, organizational development, and online marketing strategies. Previously to this, Mark was the Vice President of Sales, Economic and Business Development for American Electric Power, responsible for the strategic expansion of AEP's economic and business development programs, identifying and pursuing opportunities to increase jobs and retail customers' load across AEP's 11 states and 200,000 square miles of service territory. Please join me as we welcome Mark James to the Whitaker Report. Mark, you've been in the utility industry for 1,000 years at least, and I think you probably know more about what goes on in the utility business than anyone else I know. So I'm delighted that you're willing to take your time to kind of share some things that are happening in that industry that's so vital to economic development. But what role do you see the electric industry playing in site selection today?
Yeah, sure, Dean. And first of all, thanks for having me. With the potential exception of this one, you really have some great podcasts out there, and I really enjoy when they come out and getting to look at them. So they're great conversations, and thank you for doing them. I'll tell you, when I think about that role in site selection, I think of three main trends that I see. One is price pressures. Utility costs are rising, and we're going to talk about some of those reasons. And that in turn affects our site clients in their cost of production. And we're going to talk also about electrification, major trend across certainly the commercial and industrial customer segments of the energy industry. And so there, you think about it, for electrification, it means a higher kilowatt hour input for a dollar of output of a product, but they can do it more efficiently. But it's putting strains, we'll talk about, on the electric system. So electrification would be that second trend. And timing issues. Clearly, we are challenged. The electric industry is challenged by the ability to get to customers at the speed of market, or at least at some reasonable pace that allows them to put that capital they've committed to a project in productive use. So those are three of the things that I think are real trends worth watching and following between site selection and the energy industry.
Very interesting. And then within that, what about renewables? They seem like we're hearing renewables everywhere, these big solar farms being installed, wind farms, and all of those things. What do you see impacting? How is that impacting the grid, and where do you see that going?
Yeah, so don't want to be too elemental about it, but you know, think about it this way. You know, the wires we see above us or in the ground are basically to get energy from the site of production to the market or an end user, right? So that's in simplest terms how that works. In the U.S., there's about 4.3 trillion kilowatt hours of generation, 4.3 trillion. 60% of that in 2022, some fossil fuels. 18% nuclear and 21% from renewables. Though the forecast suggests that a vast majority of new generation coming on board is renewable, mostly solar. Wind's taking a little bit of a dip in increase, though they should be increasing about 12 gigawatts of wind in 2024. So a lot of renewables. So why did I go through all that? How, you know, wires get to end users? Renewable sources are literally considered distributed energy resources, DERs, as they call it in the industry. And so what we're doing with renewables, and I'm a big fan, but we're spreading out the generation. It would take a normal gas fired power plant, let's say nominally 500 megawatts, would take about 3,000 acres of solar. And, you know, that's a lot of land. And so we're basically spreading this all out, and it has to be connected to the end user. So I've seen estimates anywhere from $2 to $8 trillion needed in expense in the U.S. Between now and 2035 in order to connect these renewable resources into the grid to get them to market. None of these things take, that cannot be done fast, and they are expensive. And we're going to talk supply chain, but it just takes a long time. So that concerns me as an economic developer. And that's not to mention that most of the renewable sources are, they are intermittent. Until our technology gets, and I'm a big fan of, I believe in technology will help, but we get good storage, we're going to have to, you know, match up a more base type of generation like wind, like natural gas, still coal and petroleum, with renewables in order to provide a constant supply to the end user.
Very interesting. So we're looking at how do we connect. I had a chance to work on a solar farm recently. I was very surprised at the filter, which was it needed to be near 135 kVA line that had capacity on it to accept what was being produced by the solar farm. So a lot of these power lines don't have any excess capacity to them.
Right.
And that site would get eliminated. And then you had to find this uniqueness with a 3,000-acre piece of land underneath of a power line that had capacity in it to accept the power coming out of it. So I think that was the other thing we ran into.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right, Dan. So what you need is, you know, higher voltage lines, and again, that takes time and it's cost. And so matching that up, the good economic developer in the utility industry has gotten very close relationships with their transmission and distribution engineering teams, the ones that, and using it kind of advanced GIS to marry up the things we economic developers think about, you know, available land, workforce, highways, et cetera, with capacity in electric transmission grids. Mm-hmm. And it's a real-time look. The best do it in a real-time look. They can stand there with one of our site clients and show them this line right now has this kind of capacity. And if you want renewable resources today, this is what we can accept there. But over here, we're constrained in, but we can do it. But it would take more money and longer time in order to provide a size of pipe, if you will. It's not literally size of pipe big enough to support that load.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about that. So the site might be a perfect site. But and if the company elect a lot of data centers want to be renewable, then they may not be able to have renewable for some time due to the capacity of the grid locally not being able to bring them that renewable energy that they're purchasing.
Well, you bring up a good point, Dean, because the clients are wanting more and more physical renewable, not contract path, not renewable energy mm-hmm. credits. To satisfy, you know, their own interest in being served by renewable resources. So got to get pretty creative and stitch together some pretty good programs within utilities. And that I can tell you the good economic development folks in utilities are getting more and more sophisticated in how they can support their customers' interest in renewables. But it does have impacts on cost and timing.
Well, back to capacity for a moment. What are some of the electrical capacity issues that we're facing now?
Yeah, it's kind of a interesting times. May you live in them, right? There's about 1.2 terawatts of capacity in the U.S. right now. We have several clients, utility clients on the economic consulting side, that have many gigawatts, terawatts, 1,000 gigawatts, many gigawatts of projected load from data centers coming knocking, looking at locating with them. You know, those Amazon packages for Christmas don't, you know, come without a lot of data processing. And looking forward at AI-based data centers, the estimates are that they are somewhere between 3 to 5x more energy intensive than are the Amazon Web Services sort of data farms. So one client in particular, if they told me the other day, if you add up all of the data centers that are considering their territories, now, as we know, not all of those will locate and they'll certainly not go into production at one time. But if you add them all up, it equals a terawatt, which, as I said at the outset of this question, is how much capacity there is in the entire United States. So
Whoa.
it's pretty daunting. A lot of companies are really concerned about, can we continue to support economic development recruitment efforts in our communities? And that's kind of where we come in. We talk to them about getting creative with some ways they might support additional capacity, or at least contract capacities, cogeneration, et cetera, because there's a lot of water flowing in those pipes, and some places just can't support these big projects that are looking at them.
Wow. I ran into a couple situations recently where one of our clients located a large Google data center, and they had another data center client right behind them wanted to locate in the same geographic area. And they got quite a bit of pushback from the utility company saying, yes, but you got to think about, that's a limited resource that we've just allocated this much over here. To Google for their data center, and you're coming at us again with another data center.
In the days, you'll remember this. There was a bit of a clustering effect, you know, of companies. You know, so whether it's an auto manufacturer comes in, then the seat component manufacturer comes in behind that, and they tend to locate close to one another. That was all fine, but when you're throwing this much demand, and Google and Amazon and Microsoft, not to mention the developers, the data center developers, are tending to cluster around places because, you know, the access to high voltage transmission, which is a larger pipe, if you will. But even some of those are becoming constrained to where companies are going to be forced, utility companies, to build very high voltage, you know, 765 sort of capacity in their system. Those can take a decade. Those take a long time. And so now the latest trend from the site selection side is just find me a wire that'll support me. I'll worry about the dirt. I'll go find a site. I'll, you know, fiber, yeah, I'll figure that out somehow, you know, et cetera. Natural gas for backup, which is a great trend, and what the natural gas industry is doing in this space is pretty exciting. But man, it is changing the face of the site location process.
Very interesting then, in terms of the utility industry, when we divided it between generation and transmission, did that cause some of this disconnect between demand and supply when we separated those
When you made
entities?
generation competitive, is that what you mean?
Well, however you want to phrase it, but the idea is, we separated it out, and I just wondered if there was a disconnect between the customer then and their future needs and what was being generated and planned for.
Wouldn't necessarily say disconnect. I would say it added a complexity to it, right? In some ways, an opportunity. A lot of utilities have either through contracts or, you know, ownership, have unregulated energy suppliers, and they can do some pretty creative things. And that's one of the solution sets that we talk to utilities about. They can build generation, they can build the substations for a client, lease them back, and, you know, it's a financial transaction. But they know the industry, and they can stitch together enough generation capacity from varying sources to support a customers' needs. Now, it's not the 3 to 4 cents for a high industrial load that it used to be a decade or so ago. It's significantly more than that. But I think that that separation of generation from transmission has had some challenges for the industry, but it also creates some opportunities. That's what it's intended to do, to foster more creativity and technology solutions for the end use customer.
I'm going to jump back to supply and demand just for a second. I'm trying to get this in my head. So has our demand gone up that much to cause this crunch? Or were we almost at capacity before and now we've just kind of nudged over, you know, with the advent of AI and charging our electric vehicles out in our garage? Or have we pushed ourselves just over the edge, or are we way over the edge?
Well, you know, we have a, you could either look at that as a cliff coming up with all this load coming on, but the, you know, the general use of energy with the energy efficiency of equipment has mollified some of that, those impacts. The cost of production of energy has gone down with some electrification techniques, energy efficient techniques, better, you know, thermal protections and voltage controls and AI, I think, for building maintenance, for, you know, is, you know, maintaining the HVAC systems. So there's been some efficiency gains, which have, again, diminished some of the impact. And we all get kind of hung up on these massive data centers, as we've been talking. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, the utilities plan long term and look at trends every day and work with their commissions to get infrastructure in place in order to meet their communities' requirements. Some of these big ones are somewhat outliers. I'm generally bullish on the industry. This isn't a you know, wave the white flag sort of thinking. I'm bullish that the industry keep getting it figured out. And with the advent of renewables, we get storage going. That could be a game changer.
Get solar, you said?
Renewables and storage for that.
Oh, storage. Yeah.
To me, that's the big limiting factor right now, is the ability to store that energy so that you doesn't have, because right now you flip your switch and it literally is firing up a little gas plant somewhere, you know, it's an instantaneous sort of to market reaction, the electrons of the path. But we get good storage. And, you know, I've been a huge fan forever of what Canada has been doing with hydro. That's kind of storage, right? Doing it off of solar or wind into a battery infrastructure, which I expect to see, you know, really great progress in that in the next 10 years, let's say, could help us go a long way to manage what is an unmovable trend towards electrification of industry.
Very interesting. In terms of the utility industry itself, is there a consolidation going on among utility companies? Are we going to end up with the utility company?
No, I don't believe so. There has been in the past, and we've got lots of clients who are still dealing with branding issues because they kind of grew by M&A, and now they serve unique kind of territories. I have not talked to one utility client that is saying we are out looking for other utilities to purchase. Those take a long time. The C-suite knows that it takes a long time to make them profitable. The energy industry is a regulated industry. So every time you go about doing one of these things, you may have five or six state commissions that have something to say about it, as well as the federal level at FERC. So I haven't seen any great trends. And by the way, this sounds like we're talking about investor-owned utilities, mostly are on the M&A side. One of the, I think, great hopes for this country in the energy space is some of the things I see coming out of the natural gas industry, both public and private, and the a lot of the municipal and cooperative organizations that serve pretty large areas, serve some really great areas for economic development. And they're becoming, I think, more aggressive in being a real player in the electrification and the location of some of these facilities we've been talking about. So I'm bullish, but don't see a lot of consolidation that we're going to, you know, get down to, you know, the Elon Musk utility of the nation.
That's funny. So you've been involved, I'm going to switch gears just a little bit because of another role that you play. You've been involved in the Economic Development Institute for a long time, helping shape the industry of economic development. And in addition to your role at, you know, working with utility companies, what do you see overall for economic development? And then factor in utilities into that if you can.
Yeah, so I think the economic developer these days, and yes, I and thanks for the plug on Economic Development Institute. I really believe it is the gold standard in getting educated in this profession, and the only one that can lead to you getting your certification credentials, which means something inside your organization, as well as working with folks like our site selection clients. But for the industry, we've had to get smarter, more complex. At the same time, we just created a whole track of community neighborhood development, because there has to be a recognition that the economic developer has a role in Main Street and not just in industrial development, let's say, or smokestack chasing. And so the student coming into the profession is coming at it with a little bit different, not you know, philosophy of what they want to do with their career in economic development, and very dedicated, very insightful, really uber smart. And so the industry, the education industry within economic development had to transition. So we created a community development track just about 2 years ago now. But in terms of importance for the profession and things that they think of, workforce, 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 right? Both quality and quantity. Number one location factor, can't see any shift that's going to change. And so do everything from supporting your local junior achievement, who is about creating, you know, economic literacy and preparing kids for the business of life, to working on Main Street issues, working with your employers, what are their needs, working with community colleges. You know those whole drills, Gene. You've taught many years about that. Then I think about, what does AI do? And you've had some topics around that. We won't stray off into that that nest, but I would, I can't fathom just how impactful that's going to be on site selection as well as economic development. And then maybe an off the wall one that I hear a lot from local, from younger folks at the Institute and elsewhere, is our national debt and concerns mm-hmm. about that kind of handcuffing our ability as a country to grow, or get, you know, companies getting access to capital markets. It can be a bit of a crippler or have a dampening effect. So I'm bullish on the profession. I find it's broadened its role in the communities that we serve, but at the same time, having to be, I think, more sophisticated. It used to be. You're in economic development because you knew the mayor and you knew where the best steak in town was. That's not the case anymore.
Very interesting. Well, you do a lot of consulting with utility companies too in your role and helping them kind of look down the road in the future. You know, one time utilities got out of the economic development business and then they got back into it again. And it sounds like more and more of their are becoming more interested in economic development. Is that the case?
Yeah, so great question. I think, yes, that there is a general trend, though budgets are budgets, and there's some challenges that a lot, you know, utilities are still dependent on weather. So look to the weather. If you don't have good weather here, you're not going to have good economic development budget. Just kind of, they're directly proportional.
It's interesting.
Yeah, but there has been some really interesting changes, because the economic developer within a utility is a great business developer. They sell, if you will, not, you know, door-to-door sales, but they have to help a company think through the complexities of how they make an investment decision. And so they have to be generalists, but smart enough to understand basically balance sheets. That's why we teach finance at EDI, et cetera. And so if you're inside the company, you're the C-suite, and you say, I'm looking around and, you know, I need to get somebody to help us, you know, launch an EV adoption, electric vehicle adoption program. Look to the economic development team because they are business developers. So there's a trend towards more business development and more sophistication within the utility, the ED professional, which is, you believe as well, this is a profession within the industry. And the last thing I'd say on that is that the best in class are measuring themselves like the C-suite measures anything else they invest in. And I mean down to cents per share. That's back to the investor owns. But being able to demonstrate that you move the needle, you make a difference. And while doing so, you happen to help the company in things like rate cases because you are involved and you do things that help grow the economy. And folks who get elected and have a say-so over your rates and your returns value those things. So more sophistication, broader roles within their own companies, and a very strong set of accountability and metrics measurements.
We haven't talked at all about climate change, and we've kind of danced around that a little bit. Yeah. But I know you at one point in your career were quite involved in closing down coal plants and this conversion of coal plants and other uses. But at the same time, has that impacted then our supply side issue, or have we filled back in with other sources of fuel for generating our electricity?
Clearly, we haven't had, you know, locally we've had some brownouts and things. So I wouldn't say we've, you know, majorly impacted the ability to generate energy. What coal plants were doing, and my career was spent in a lot of areas where we were at one time predominantly coal-fired, closing those facilities prematurely, let's say, before their useful life, has a couple of impacts. One, the ratepayers have already paid for that investment. And so from a, you know, price squeeze and rate increase standpoint, that's a sunk cost. So that has to be accounted for. It also deals with this energy density where I said, you know, a coal-fired power plant could be like, you know, a couple of units, 1,200 megawatts. Well, how many acres do you need of solar for 1,200 megawatts plus the transmission to get it places, et cetera? So it's created real pressures on cost to the end user. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say, because I care about growing jobs. These, you know, most often where these plants were the largest employer in some areas where, like we served a lot of Appalachia, my former employer still does. We really care about what's happening to those employees, and it's never fun walking in there, which I've done, into a coal plant saying we're closing this operation down. We have done some viable reuse things. Companies are looking at viable reuse. There's a lot of transmission there. So putting some renewable sources, some natural gas, cleaner, quote unquote, sources. And since you mentioned coal, I'll just say, keep an eye out for clean coal technology, carbon sequestration, and other technologies. That federal government is supportive of looking at these. They had been very expensive technologies that utilities couldn't get commissions to approve. But I think that I'm a little bullish on that technology improvements in order to, you know, take out carbon or sequester it and create a clean source from a natural resource.
Mm-hmm. The other one we hadn't touched on, but I'd like to touch on, if you don't mind, was supply chain issues. I know we've been working with some companies that are very quick to look at plant closing to go in and try to see if the power that facility was using is still available and or the transformers that were used at that location. So there's kind of this rush to take a a look at some of these large manufacturing facilities that have closed and try to come back in on them to see if the power is still available and also the equipment.
Right. Yeah, we on supply chain, a couple of thoughts. One is what you just said, and I'll tell communities, hey, you need a highlight on your website, plant closures. And they go, what, are you crazy? So it's a workforce. You may have plant infrastructure, like you said, right? So that's one component of it. And they're doing that because the lead times for some of the especially very high voltage transformers and other equipment, switchgear, et cetera, that are needed in order to do what we've been talking about during this podcast, combine these renewable intermittent resources with a base load generation and get it to market, et cetera, et cetera. I saw a stat the other day that the high voltage transformer market is growing at an annual compound rate of something just shy of 7%. Pretty good growth rate. And with the supply chain post-COVID kinds of things still hanging on somewhat, sadly, most utilities are having to tell their prospective clients, customers, it used to be our standard was telling them, well, it's going to be 18 months till we can get you connected. It is not unusual to hear 3 to 5 years now.
Whoa.
And how does a company, a client of ours on the site side, though they do long-range planning, how do they abide those sort of timeframes? Now, aggressive companies are finding solutions. That's a whole nother podcast probably, but it is a challenge for us as a country, and it's a challenge for the electric industry, and therefore it's a challenge for those who are looking to place new capital investment that create jobs and growth in the places we care about. So it's a toughie. And I will say one creative solution that I've seen in Virginia, actually, is that the state funded prospective extension of transmission facilities to well attributed, certified, whatever sites, respectively, and allows the utility to get that investment in rate base. There is an old term in the utility business, used and useful, that the commissions won't let you get recovery for it until it's in use. Well, so this changes that a bit, and it is a model. And I encourage, lot utilities, go together with your other utilities, your co-opetitors around you in your states, and go to your states and take a look at the Virginia model, because I think that's one solution to this very real supply chain issue.
Thank you. That was very insightful. Just in wrapping up, any particular, looking in your crystal ball, what do you see next coming down the road? We've talked about a lot of topics here, but just if you want to just wrap up your thoughts around our conversations today.
Yeah, well, first, I thought about this because you fed me these early. I really believe that the economic development profession is more necessary now than it may have been at any time in our history. The complexity of capital investment being made in communities, what grows communities, knowing that a manufacturer does, a Walmart, serves that community because there are people there that have income to shop at those places, understanding that. Understanding a bit about the balance sheet of a company and the myriad of location factors, some of which we've talked about here, are more complex. It's a evolving profession, and I know the people that are interested in this profession are up to it. So I'm very, very bullish on that. I am worried about us as an economy in U.S., as an economy relative to workforce, as we've discussed. I think globally, I think about a lot of the challenges we face with conflicts around that's certainly weighs on everyone's hearts and minds. And last thing I'd say, you know, having an opportunity to work with a firm like Hickey, the family of companies, there is a real need for smart, smart people to look at industries like vertical ag and what it can do to help eliminate, you know, food deserts. To place these facilities and where the technology is going there. I'm really bullish on where I see the site selection industry going, how they help a company take look at the entire landscape, not just do you have the right piece of dirt for me, but social solutions to some of the challenges we're facing. I see them when they're talking to their clients about it and they're lit up because, you know, this kind of field is a not just a profession, but an avocation, passion, right? And the best folks in this profession, like you, like Whitaker, care, and so they tend to take a little different look than just X's and O's on a spreadsheet somewhere. So challenges, yes. I don't want us to go down the road of Germany, which has really been suffering from a too quick a move away from sources of generation, and it's impacted their industrial output. But bullish on the profession, both site selection and economic development. And if you're not an optimist, maybe you need to find something else to do.
Mark, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it. And I look forward to carrying on our conversations in the future.
Well, thank you, Dean. I appreciate the time to be together.